So AI can be an amazing inroad with huge potential. And every time you have something with that kind of potential and that kind of promise, there can also be huge peril. And so our view is that you can't stop the future and you can't stop progress. You need to harness it. You need to make it fair. You may need to have the guardrails. You need to have the equity, but we need to harness it and create that opportunity. And in fact, one thing that may surprise people is that we've done some polling of our own members in terms of AI and technology.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome back to Regulating AI, the podcast dedicated to bringing diverse voices to the forefront of the AI conversation. We feature insights from various perspectives, from industry leaders to government officials to advocacy groups, to create practical and equitable regulation. Today, we have a special guest with us, Randy Weingarten, the president of the American Federation of Teachers, AFT, representing educators, school support professionals, and higher education faculty in the United States. Randy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sanjay, for having us. We're really honored.
Wonderful. Randy, our listeners comprise, it's a global listener base. We have members of Congress, their staff, think tanks, industry, advocacy groups. Can you please tell them a little bit about your background and how you became involved with the American Federation of Teachers?
Absolutely. So, look, I am one of those people who grew up before computers, who grew up before the internet, who thought an electric typewriter was a big, huge advance. I am the president of the AFT, which is a 1.72 membership organization and union that makes a difference in the lives of people. We represent higher education personnel, K-12, nurses, bus drivers, public employees. And I started myself as both a teacher and a lawyer. I taught at Clara Barton High School in Brooklyn, New York. You have my dog with us today, too. So she wants to be part of the podcast. And now what I do is I do all sorts of other things to try to help really make a difference in the lives of people and real solutions for real people to make sure that we lift up our communities to make sure that they can have a better life.
Well, that's great. And Randy, artificial intelligence, AI is the topic du jour wherever you go, whether it's at Davos and Congress, et cetera. How do you see the role of artificial intelligence, AI, evolving in education? And what opportunities and challenges do you think it presents?
So AI can be an amazing inroad with huge potential. And every time you have something with that kind of potential and that kind of promise, there can also be huge peril. And so our view is that you can't stop the future and you can't stop progress. You need to harness it. You need to make it fair. You may need to have the guardrails. You need to have the equity, but we need to harness it and create that opportunity. And in fact, one thing that may surprise people is that we've done some polling of our own members in terms of AI and technology. And right now, over 75% of educators every single day are using technology in their classrooms. So the real question becomes, how do we do a way of using its potential, having guardrails against its peril, but also given that AI will change the workforce and will change the face of what we have in America and in the world, how do we have, for this industrial revolution, a just transition? We've never done that in the world, but how do we try to do that this time?
So, Randy, I think you made some great points. One is obviously explore the potential, keep the guardrails, but more importantly, a just transition. Randy, there are in your testimony, written testimony to Senator Schumer, you had mentioned about some level of equity for AI where students who don't have those high-powered computers with graphics cards, et cetera, how can we ensure that AI technology in education remains accessible to all students regardless of socioeconomic background?
So, Sanjay, I'm glad you asked the question that way, and I'm so glad that was one of your first questions about how do we do this? Because it kind of gets into the bucket of we have to educate people so that they themselves can have agency here and be smart, not only consumers, but purveyors of information. We have to have the guardrails like against disinformation and misinformation and security and privacy. But this issue about equity, it's so important. I mean, and let me just take a step back and say this. Think about what happened in COVID initially and how everything shut down, school shut down. What would happen to students if the only thing they had was a smartphone? Here's my smartphone and my little cover. But even if they didn't have an iPad like I'm using right now in this Zoom, or a computer or a desktop or something that actually had a lot of power to it, or internet at home, if they didn't have any of these things, then what was going to happen is they were definitely going to be falling behind even more. And how many students who then also didn't have transportation had to go to hotspots like at a McDonald's or somewhere else to get their internet? And how much does internet actually cost? Like the internet in my house, because it's high speed, you know, we pay a couple $100 a month for it. So all of these were equity issues at the start of COVID. Could you imagine with AI how much you then roll up even more of the equity issues? So we're going to have to create access for kids in a way that's meaningful. And if we don't, then we're basically saying to kids that it's okay that you're falling behind.
So equity, we don't want another digital divide that we have in our country right now. Is we don't want an AI divide is what you're saying.
And it will get worse because we still have the digital divide even after COVID as the funding is starting to get pulled back. So parents used to get $10 a month. You could get internet. As that is starting to get pulled back, the digital divide is increasing again. So we can't exacerbate it. And that's exactly what will happen unless we figure out the subsidies to create some equity.
So from equity, let's go to another topic, which is a very important one also, because AI is large language models taking the data that exists on the internet. And as sometimes the data has all kinds of biases and other stuff. What measures do you think should be in place to prevent bias and discrimination in AI-driven educational systems, Randy?
Well, so I think we have to do two things at the same time. One of which, and I said this at my Schumer written testimony as well, and this issue about the bias in the information was something that was raised by all the civil rights organizations as well. So number one, we have to acknowledge and understand that AI is basically taking all the existing information and putting it together. So if there's bias in that original information, we have to figure out how to create an offset. And so there are people who are working on that work, but that kind of offsetting information is going to have to be part of the big data that ultimately gets included. I think there's going to have to be some code words or some cautionary notes about what the basis of the information is. And I think that's going to also be really important in terms of disinformation. So number one, I think the same kinds of things we're doing to try to stop disinformation, we're going to have to try to do in terms of bias. The FCC and others are going to have to be very engaged in this. The Biden executive order was very good on this. And frankly, the EU is years ahead of us in terms of what to do. So that's number one in terms of a regulatory basis. And that all of that is going to have to happen. again, remember, I went through school without having access of the internet. So I am relying on others to figure out, like you, Sanjay, to figure out how to do that. But we need to do that. But the second piece we need to do, and this is what's controversial, is I think that the time for stopping these immunity statutes are over. We need to actually have ways of holding the companies responsible and accountable. And just like we do in any other products liability work, not only in the United States, but the EU does it as well. And there has to be a way of creating a product liability rubric here to hold people accountable for intentional bad acts or for reckless endangerment. And when you have those immunity statutes available, then these big companies don't, as much as they may say, and look, we're working with Microsoft, we would like to work with others, but as much as they, some of them are good actors, I think that check and balance has to be there for individuals to be able to sue if necessary.
So let me just follow up on that point, Randy, because in a lot of your discussions, you use the social media example that we don't want to go back to the box or the horrible box that we find ourselves. Senator Josh Haley and Senator Blumenthal have a bill out there that kind of talks to some of the immunity issues. The question becomes is, how do we get there? I mean, you're right. EU obviously has gotten much, much further ahead. But do you think that teachers, students, and parents also should have more of a say in implementing education technologies like AI?
Absolutely. And I think if they don't, they're going to be, A, both afraid of it, nervous about it, and it's not going to be implemented as well as it ought to be. What tends to happen is that every time we get to a transition like this, you've got the haves and the have-nots. So I can tease about saying I start without a computer background. So everything has to be learned by me. I don't have an instinct for it. But if we end up engaging people in this, and frankly, teachers, 85% of teachers have said they are not engaged enough and they're not given ownership enough. And we did a poll a while ago while we did the same polling of educators with parents, with a group called Parents Together, and they said the same thing. I also think we should have media literacy in schools. I think this is a new literacy, and we need to make sure that people understand it and are comfortable with it. So I think that this is something that the more comfortable people are, the more they themselves will understand both the promise as well as the peril. And it is a way of seizing our future.
So do you think, Randy, just to follow up on that point, that our teachers need new skill sets to keep pace with AI?
Yes. And they need time to understand it. We've been having these regional meetings, Sanjay, of our leaders around the country. We had one in the Northeast this weekend. The AI panels were packed, standing room only. And so here we are, a national union, not only doing the AI resolution, being at Senator Schumer's work, working with Microsoft, working with OpenAI, but we're also really doing in every meeting we have some introduction to AI. We also have a benefit, an anti-disinformation benefit that we're doing with GPT-0 and with NewsGuard. So, but we are one civic organization, one membership organization, as opposed to how do we do this for everyone?
Randy, we've had many guests who come in from the education, experts in education, who say our education system is a one-size-fits-all. And they're saying AI is going to be providing personalized education to every child in our country, you know, based on this. What are your thoughts on personalized teaching for students?
First off, I wish the system was a little bit more where that it had a little bit more of the equity that when somebody says a one-size-fits-all would actually suggest. Our system is really fractionalized. It's 50 different systems across the country. Does it still have some of the factory-like basis that it had 100 years ago? Yes. But that is probably because we have a one-size-fit-all accountability system of testing for English and math every single year from 3 through high school. So the issue is frankly not personalized instruction. The issue is, are we going to have a well-rounded instruction that meets the needs of all kids? And in that context, there is some high-octane tutoring, there's some personalized instruction, but we are going to be in terrible shape if all of a sudden every single student is on a computer all day long in personalized instruction. One of the things we learned from COVID, if that was the case, all that remote education from COVID would have been fantastic. What we really need is we need the relationship building. We need the community building. We need to make sure that kids can actually work with each other. And so does personalized instruction have a role in that? Of course, every time a student does a paper, that's personalized instruction. Every time you try to figure out ways of doing critical thinking individually, every time you write an essay, every time you do a research project, that's personalized instruction. But I really worry about us not doing the relationship building and the community building that kids really need. I really worried about loneliness and actually more and more isolation. So I don't buy into the, okay, all this is going to be is a lot more personalized instruction. We have to really do things that create ways of kids learning with each other, working with each other, and having the skills then to do the analysis that they need. Personalized instruction is important there, but the tutelage of a teacher is really important in an in-person setting and having a class with people so that kids actually understand, work with each other, not are afraid of each other, and be able to understand and be able to grip with and embrace the diversity, the proud diversity of America, and understand how to work and play with each other. So if there's a conflict, you don't become forsworn enemies. That's what I'm really afraid of.
So what you're saying, very important points are that teachers are very relevant, working with each other so that we can embrace the differences and the diversities. That becomes very critical. Personalized teaching could be a supplement, but not a replacement is what you may be a co-pilot or a supporter or something like that.
Right. Look, we just went through this experiment with COVID and everyone said just the remote learning in and of itself was a terrible idea. As a supplement, yes, but it's a terrible idea. Doing it now this way, we need to really rebuild community and relationships.
Randy, switching to data privacy and security, do you have concerns about that in an AI-driven educational platform?
Yes, I have concerns about that in all sorts of platforms. I have concerns about that, about disinformation, about trafficking, about theft of private information. I mean, I know other people are concerned about plagiarism and things like that, but I am concerned about these three very major things. So the security issues, disinformation, theft of private information, and all of this stuff, I am concerned about that. And I'm also really concerned about trafficking, particularly on kids.
So those are things that are very important. But Randy, if you were to advise some of the young people how to thrive in an AI future, what would you be telling them?
I would say, let's not be afraid of it. Let's embrace it. But let's also have, this is why regulation becomes important. We have to regulate against disinformation. We have to regulate against invasion of privacy. We have to regulate against violence. And the media companies that are involved here have to take real responsibility. I think that this notion, and look, the Supreme Court has two very important cases here. This is not about First Amendment freedoms. This is really about commerce and about how we deal with commerce and how we deal with the freedom of people to live. So this is harnessing a huge amount of information that's going to be at people's fingertips, and that information will be generative. So it is formidable, but we have to protect people, just like we protect people. We say that our streets have to be safe and welcoming. Our schools have to be safe and welcoming. The internet or our technology has to be safe and welcoming.
So our schools have to be safe, Randy. So should algorithms, AI be regulated?
Sorry, you know what my answer is on that one.
I know. Should algorithms and AI be regulated in education settings, yeah, like grading?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because let's say this. If you have an algorithm as a private company and you decide what that algorithm is, you are substituting your judgment for the judgment of the school and the school teacher. And so there has to be A, transparency about the algorithm, and B, whether or not that algorithm is being used. But I would actually go a step further, which is in our study about that's called Like versus Learned and designed for us, several parent and youth groups worked with us not only on this study, but on the California law, which is how do we stop the kind of violence or bullying that happens to school kids that happens on social media? So part of it is the algorithm and regulating the algorithm, but part of it is also when this can be operational. So why do we not, for example, have, if there's a bullying instance in a school, why is there not immediate contact between the social media company who can track down the IP address that the bully may have used and get to the school so the school can do an investigation more quickly? Why is there not that kind of work? Why is the algorithm is the property of the company? The consumer has to deal with its effects. So the consumer has to either know about the components of the algorithm or has to be able to deal with it in some way, form, or manner. And if this consumer is a child and in a school, it's even harder. So that's why I think that there has to be some ways of regulating. You can't just put all of this on the teacher, the kid, or the parent.
So do you suggest that there should be an oversight board to monitor the fairness and ethics of AI in education?
I believe that given how fast moving this is, by the time you figure out one regulation, you need another one. And so probably, I haven't thought about who that board should be, but probably there has to be an arbitrator or a monitor or somebody that is calling balls and strikes. Because if not, look at what you went through, the Holy Blumenthal bill. That's a good bill, but it's not law yet. By the time it gets to be law, we're going to need something different. That's why I'm saying EU has done a far better job than we have. And then take the laws that were passed in California. The first moment that they were passed, they were struck down by the courts because the social media companies came in and challenged them. That's now going to be before the Supreme Court. So if this was about our streets and the problem was violent gangs as opposed to violent social media, we have no problem with police on the street trying to stop it. But think about what we have a problem here now. And I think we have to think about how we create safe and welcoming environments for our kids.
Safe and welcoming environment for our kids are very critical. You mentioned one point, Randy, and I've had several members of Congress and Senate come in. They say AI is evolving so fast. Every day it changes. How are regulations going to keep up? I mean, you mentioned that in Washington, we don't do fast. Well, we don't do even, forget fast, we don't do slow these days. So how will we keep up with the changes? Are we talking about multimodal agents, large language models, AGI? How do we keep up with this regulation? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's going to be very, very hard. That's why I go back to, we have to withdraw these immunity statutes. In products liability, we have figured out how to keep up with it in the following way. If somebody is intentionally reckless or malfeasant, they get a huge penalty. And that penalty becomes a way of creating some accountability. And if we don't have that, or that kind of umpire that talks about balls and strikes, then it's going to be impossible.
Randy, you mentioned a few times about a collaboration with Microsoft, and maybe even you mentioned OpenAI. Do you think industry collaboration with education and organizations like yours is possible, given that they might have a little bit of a different interest? They want to, some people would argue they want to have a monopoly like you see in social media, and that's a big concern. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, it is a really big concern. And if the purveyor of a product doesn't actually talk to the consumer of that product, particularly since the consumer of that product, whether it be kids, families, or educators, is pretty responsible for how that product is going to be used in the space, or will start fighting against that product, it's in the company's best interest to work with us. And frankly, I would argue it's in our best interest to work with them. I'm not saying that we're all getting into bed together. I'm saying that it is in both best interests to have a real conversation, collaboration, meeting of the minds, if that is possible. And frankly, the ed tech companies tried to do it around us at the turn of the last century, and it did work. And I tell the story often of I was in a meeting, I think it was at Stanford, and there was all the ed tech companies were in the room. And I said, work with us. Help us. Work with us in terms of this transition. One company did. That's it. And a company that worked with us, that was from Great Britain, who ended up helping us put the Share My Lesson platform together, a platform that now has over 2 million people on it. We do it. We use it for free of teachers helping each other. I thought that was ridiculous because you're not at the end of the day. This is spoiler alert to every capitalist that's watching this. Education requires educators. If we're really going to help kids actually be prepared for life, career, college, and citizenship, we live in a very humanistic world. We need to get back to that. COVID actually hurt that a lot. And so anybody who attempts to take educators out of education, everybody who's tried to do it beforehand has failed. They'll fail again. And so the ones who have learned to work with us are the ones who are going to be successful. And if they don't, what's going to happen is their products are not going to be used. And they'll have some really angry teachers and parents.
Yeah. Educators are critical, and they better work.
They're critical.
And collaboration is very important.
Yeah. And you hear me, Sanjay, saying over and over again, we can't stop the future.
Yeah.
We have to embrace it. And we have to learn how to do that too. And that's why I welcome the collaboration that we're doing with Microsoft. We have to find ways that you can trust and still be yourselves. And we got to figure that out.
And you're open to other companies too, besides Microsoft.
Of course, of course. But look, Microsoft understood that it was important to have the relationship. So many of the other companies how many times have they shut their doors in front of us thinking that they could go around it? And so you can't go around educators. And frankly, I think what we're starting to show because of how many workers want to be part of the labor movement, particularly young workers, you can't go around the labor movement either.
Yeah. So working with you, not going around you. Randy, you talked about something, or at least mentioned something, which I thought is very, very important, because we are talking about some massive changes in workforce. You talk about an AI transition for, and like I said, I've spoken to many people. You were the first one who's actually discussed this. Can you tell our listeners what this is? What your idea is of an AI transition fund, so to speak, for the transition that is coming our way.
Looking to make the most out of AI advancements and innovation? Visit regulatingai.org to learn more about how best to optimize the use and integration of AI, and sign up for the Regulating AI newsletter to keep up to date with the latest in AI governance and regulation.
Right. So what has happened is that there's going to be huge displacement of individuals in lots of different jobs. It's not going to be the teacher in the classroom, but there's going to be other, and I would argue it's not going to be the bus driver, but there's going to be huge transitions in all sorts of different kind of work, automation, other kinds of transitions, things we can't even imagine today. So people in America want to work. Not everybody, but most people in America, they understand that they want to work for a decent wage and decent benefits. They want to have family sustaining jobs. So what we need to do in terms of a just transition is we need to make sure that if somebody's job is terminated and they're displaced and they want to work, we have to help them get through the transition. And so it's not going to be the new employer that hasn't hired them, or you don't even imagine who the new employer is. This is where government has a real role. And this is where a just transition fund could really work. Look, maybe it's because my father was an engineer, an electrical engineer. I will never forget the day that he came home crying. My father is a proud man. He never cried because he was laid off from his electrical engineering job because they worked in the defense industry, and that industry at that moment was changing hugely. And it took him 2 years to get another job with his skill set. Think about what has happened in the Midwest from the last industrial change, from globalization, from the other internet revolution. Think about what's happened with the climate change. We need to learn from that and make sure we don't take away people's dignity. And that's what I mean by having a just transition fund. We have to learn from the mistakes of the past.
That's, I think, is a very important point, Randy, because I ask almost all our guests, because everybody says, McKinsey, IMF, that major workforce changes are coming, not just for teachers, but, you know, they could be for coders, they could be for customer service reps, etc. What are the solutions? And you're the first person who said that we need it. Just people say, hey, we need reskilling, we need upskilling, etc. But who's going to provide that? That's a question.
If you don't have that kind of just transition fund, how are you going to live while you're getting reskilled? What's going to happen? I mean, this should not simply be something that a working class representative understands. And it's about the dignity of work and finding those avenues. And there will be lots of jobs of today and tomorrow. Look at what the Biden administration has done in the last 3 years. And look at what's going to happen when chips come back to the United States. I never bet against America. But if we don't have that kind of just transition, what's going to happen? And we've seen it. We saw it after with globalization. We've seen it in terms of what happened when the Midwest was denominated the Rust Belt, and what that now means in terms of the anger in America.
Because there are not just economic, but there are social, societal consequences of this.
Exactly.
Also.
We work in McDowell County, West Virginia. It's coal mine county and country. Coal is a way of life. It's not just a job. And when somebody says, oh, we don't need coal anymore, what a coal miner and their family hear is you don't need me anymore. We have to learn from our mistakes.
I think those are really important points. Randy, you've been so grateful with your time. Some final comments for our listeners, as I told you, the kind of listeners we have, some final concerns, what keeps you up at night, some thoughts for our listeners, Randy.
So look, remember the old Flintstones, the old TV shows about the future and all of that. The future is here. We know the mistakes of the past. History teachers, technologists, futurists, we are a world that can actually think through change and sees the future in a way that's equitable, in a way that creates fairness, in a way that respects the dignity of people. Shame on us if we don't do this. We know the issues. Let's make sure we find ways to create the guardrails. Seize the future. Don't pretend it's not in front of us. But let's make sure we have the guardrails so that all of us can seize the future.
Randy, thank you for your insights. Seizing the future with the guardrails. Really, that's been extremely valuable. We know our listeners was going to glean some valuable perspectives from you and your conversation and your work at AFT. Thank you for the time. Really, really appreciate it, Randy.
Thank you, Sanjay.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.